This week, we're talking about Honda's new EV manual transmission and how the hell that's going to work. Plus, BMW is looking a little more electric, and I mean literally. We also have an interview with 2024 IMSA Drivers Champion Felipe Nasr. But first, a V6 Ferrari?
What?
Welcome to the Big Three.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now, back to the show.
If this is your first time listening, welcome to the Big Three. We do car news the Aki way.
Hey, yo, Aki, let me get a burrito the Aki style.
Sure.
My name is Nolan Sykes, joined this week by Joe Weber. And for the first time on the Big Three, Steph Gutierrez. What's up?
Hello.
Hello. Steph, you have been on Real Mechanic Stuff for a good while, as well as a newer addition to what we call the main channel over on Donut. Yeah, you've been on Hi-Low. You've been doing a lot of stuff like our lowrider build Miata. That was awesome. Yeah. But for the people who don't know or haven't seen you on those videos, could you tell them a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what your background is?
You know, I'm just a little dude from the Inland Empire, a.k.a. the IE. Shout out all my IE babies. It's crazy out there. It's definitely different than L.A., but yeah, I was an Audi technician for like 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I still currently go to school to get, I'm completing all my certificate patterns to be super ASC certified and super Master Tech certified.
Heck yeah.
You're definitely the most qualified mechanic at Donut.
It's really funny because anytime anyone asks me to explain anything, I'm like, I don't know. Sorry, guys.
you moved closer to the office. You moved from the IE to, I want to say, Orange County-ish, right?
So, don't dox her, dude.
Well, oh, okay, yeah.
No, so he's not even closely right.
good.
No, so I grew up in the IE, and then I moved, still Inland Empire, still San Bernardino, area, but I just moved to like the desert, which was 2 hours from here.
Oh my god.
So now I still live in the IE, just a little bit closer, the Rancho Ontario area.
Gotcha.
Very, very nice.
Nice.
Definitely a culture shock. I feel like I'm above the tax bracket that I actually am.
what are some of the big differences between the IE and LA?
I think the only like real significant difference that I can notice is like my road rage went from like a 6 to like an 11.
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Oh my god.
You need to be like, people talk about driving defensively. I think when you move to LA, you got to drive offensively. You got to be a real dick.
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah. Fools will not let you in.
No. You got to
have nose in. Yeah. What's your biggest pet peeve with traffic driving?
I think the biggest one is like I feel like everyone gets in their car and it's kind of like you feel like this is like your little home. You need to like, mm-hmm. I'm like,
yeah.
Bitch, you're not going to cut
elbows
me off.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, hell
gotta
yeah.
Be elbows out. Out yeah. Out
I think my biggest thing is I hate when I'm looking in my rear view and I see a dickhead like driving like ass. And I know he's coming my way and I know he's going to cut me off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I try to like speed up to not let him give him the chance.
That's also my pet peeve is when you, like, because you understand patterns so well if you drive in traffic for a long time. And you're like, that guy, I know he's going to be in the turn lane until it's like a, you know, solid line. Then he's going to cut over the triangle to get back in.
Absolutely.
And then it happens. And you're like, I knew it. And I wanted to like mess with him and I wasn't in a position to do that. But also that's like such an unhealthy way to think about driving.
Also, like, it's, you don't need to take it personally.
No. It's not
you
personal.
Don't.
No.
You 100% don't. Flow. And my car is definitely not fast. My daily driver is not fast enough for me to be speeding up and like making anyone's life harder.
You drive a 370?
No. Hell no. I don't even have a 370. I have a 350Z.
Oh, okay.
I have a G37. And then I have a ton of cars. But my daily is a CRV.
Oh, okay.
So that thing is dying. It's on the decline. Every time she starts up, you feel her.
Are you a like VQ enthusiast?
Yeah, but they suck. I think I'm like, I'm self-aware enough to know like, yeah, I fuck with it. It's really stupid. It's hard to make horsepower. You dump a ton of money into it and like just to gain like maybe 20 plus. And that's it.
I mean, it's because the platform itself is really good. And like you kind of put up with the downsides of the VQ itself. Like when the we had the VQs and the 350s, like, it, you know, power adder wise, you're not going to be making a lot unless you turbocharge it. And even that introduces a lot of its own problems, but like, it's still a very responsive motor. Yep. Like, still very fun to drive, like perfect amount of power for that platform. So, and with the right exhaust sounds good, but most people choose the wrong exhaust. Yeah.
Most people just say, dude, man, straight pipe.
Yep.
Live that trumpet lifestyle. Ugh.
Terrible.
Where all my trumpet livers at. Oh, man.
So, yeah, welcome to the big three stuff.
Thank you guys so much. We're very happy to have
you. Oh, you had a pretty cool weekend trip / shoot. You were technically working this weekend. Well, you and Justin were out in Washington.
Yeah, tell us what that's.
So, it was a lot of fun. Sometimes when I have so much fun, but it's for work, I don't even think of it as work.
Oh,
truthfully,
yeah, cool.
Like, going from being a technician to what I do now, I'm like, man, this is a silly job. Mm-hmm. Like, I have no reason to complain. Like, I come in and I act silly and mm-hmm. I work on cars mm-hmm. and I do cool shit. But, we were out there doing rally racing.
Hell yeah.
Shout out Dirtfish. Man, their facility is so lit.
I've never been. Cool. I was very jealous watching your guys' stories, for sure.
Dude, it is so, they have like 300 like acres.
Jeez.
And they have like different like sections. Like, they'll have like, okay, these three tracks are like the most mm-hmm. advanced ones. And like, this is the skid plate and this is the boneyard.
The boneyard?
Yeah, the boneyard.
Is it full of bones or?
Contrary to popular belief, it is not. But it does have a lot of turns, like curves. So it kind of like makes you like, really instill that left foot braking and like, mm-hmm. you know, all that shit that they're teaching
so
us.
So you were learning how to rally race, right?
Yes, sir.
It looked pretty, like it had been raining a lot. It was pretty muddy.
Oh, how was that? Super muddy. Mm-hmm. In my perspective, I felt like, hell yeah. Cause I closed my eyes. I'm like, I'm a real rally racer. Yeah. I'm Michelle. I don't know how to pronounce your last name. Michelle Mouton.
Yeah.
I was going to say mutton. And I was like, it's not mutton. Do not say mutton. It made me feel like, okay, we're learning to do shit like an and like adapt to like what real rally racers do. Because mm-hmm. that, I think that's like the craziest part of rally is like, it is never the exact conditions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's constantly changing. And like the first, and like our instructors were saying this, like the first couple of cars like go on the track, like they have it the shittiest.
Really?
Because they have to, so if it's raining and stuff, you have like, so you have your layer of like what is ground, right? Where mm-hmm. you grip at.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then with the mud and stuff and like debris and all that shit, it creates us like a slush layer on mm-hmm. top.
Oh, yeah.
So the first couple cars that like pass, like it's the shitties because it's kind of harder to like execute like the exact control that you want on the mm-hmm. car.
Because it's like a layer of peanut butter on top.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Perfect analogy.
I'm hungry now.
Where's some good peanut butter when you need it? But yeah, so like they'll go through and they have it the shittiest, but as more cars like go through, like they start pushing aside that top layer of like mm-hmm. slush and debris. Mm-hmm. And they start making a like kind of like a little track for like you to grip.
Mm-hmm.
So then of course the cars after that, like kind of it's a little bit easier to control and shit like that.
Cause then there's more rocks and like harder packs.
Harder packs. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I love the fact that we learned under those conditions. It made me really feel like, damn, we're really out here doing rally shit. That's awesome.
It's a fun experience.
So, yeah, that'll be in a video coming out in a few weeks. Steph will be learning how to rally. That's awesome.
Hell yeah.
One Joe, of many things I learned how to do.
Like order fish at the market down there in Seattle. Yeah,
catch a fish. Did you see the catching?
I have seen those videos. I want to do that so badly. I just don't know if I would be able to fully like catch a fish.
Yeah.
That bitch looks big and slippery.
They're heavy and slippery for sure.
See?
Joe, what'd you have going on this weekend?
This weekend, I just hunkered down and did baby stuff. But nice. Last weekend,
crawled around.
Which you'll see later on in the video.
Oh, yeah.
We went to the IMSA, the final IMSA race of the season, Petit Le Mans in Atlanta. And we got an awesome opportunity to interview who later became the driver's champion, Felipe Nasr, thanks to the Porsche Penske racing team, which won the manufacturer's championship.
Ooh, okay.
So it was like a very exciting thing to just jump into. They treated us right. And nice. You'll see in the video later that Felipe Nasr is like awesome down to earth guy. Our interview went really well and
nice.
Excited for you guys to watch that.
I'm excited to hear that. So I got nothing to share with you all. So let's just get into
the
news.
You worked on your bathroom.
I work my home office. I have a home office now and it's very great. I got wow. I have a futon in there.
Hell yeah. Oh, that's yeah. Cool.
So now it's you're like a life. It's a office slash guest room slash I have
man
a
man cave.
I mean, I have like a workbench.
Do you have a shotgun
there.
On the wall?
No shotgun.
I think you should.
I should. Yeah, maybe I should get a gun. Why not?
Some good decor.
Yeah, and that would be kind of
antlers
sick,
right? And a shotgun.
No antlers.
Or antlers holding a shotgun.
Okay.
I think you're onto something, dude.
Yeah, like that. Okay, let's about me. Let's talk about Ferrari. Ferrari has an exhausting list of sick cars, but their Formula One-inspired F cars might be their most iconic, talking about the F40, yeah. F50, Enzo, LaFerrari. But now, guys, there's a new one. Last week, Ferrari unveiled the F80. And it's pretty controversial for some reason. I don't know why, but we'll get into it. For starters,
there's a lot of people that are like fixing it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, we'll
and doing renders.
It. Yeah. For starters, the F80 has lost the V12 that powered the last several generations of Ferrari Halo cars. The F80 has a 3-liter V6 and 3 electric motors in the drivetrain. This thing is all-wheel drive, sort of. The styling is pretty polarizing. I think that's the first point of contention that people have with this thing. Yeah. Let's get your guys' opinion on this thing.
Have you seen this, Steph?
I have not.
It looks like that, guys.
What's your first impression, Steph?
I can't say I'm a fan.
Oh, okay. What do you think of that black strip on the front?
From the front, it kind of looks like, okay, it could be cool. I don't like that shot. I don't like the ass shot. I don't like that rear... lower back mid like area.
It's got some louvers with 6 openings, one for each cylinder of the engine. It looks kind of boring, to be honest.
Yeah,
it's a little boring.
It's a little underwhelming.
Ew, that looks little. That looks gross.
I know I say this kind of a lot, or I feel like I say this a lot, but it does look like a Grand Theft Auto car, like something that you get
totally
for DLC
when it's just generic enough.
It's like kind of generic, but. After,
that looks like AI created it.
It doesn't have the same kind of like the Enzo is like one of my favorite Ferraris just because like that thing was so pointy and such like clearly just had so much style to it, so much attitude. Same thing with the LaFerrari. I think the LaFerrari was a little bit of a step back from the Enzo, but like so many people have had opinions and issues with this car, especially when it comes to the styling being kind of boring. But
a lot of people are comparing it to a Civic Type R. The front end, at least. I think it looks better than that. But I do think the SF90 looks better than this car.
I'll agree with that. I think most of Ferrari's lineup looks better than this car. But I don't think... I think people are mad about this car for the wrong reasons. There's this aerodynamicist on YouTube. He used to work for some other F1 teams named Kyle Engineers. That's his channel name.
Well, that's such an appropriate last name for a guy.
25-minute video on the aerodynamics of this car, and he goes through all like kind of the renders that we just looked at, or the photos, the official photos that we just looked at, and some of the engineering drawings that Ferrari released showing like the way air moves through the car.
Sure.
And knowing now how air moves around the car and how this thing is designed to cut through the air at the way it does and make also like 1,000 kilograms of downforce at 150
That's
miles an
the
hour.
Thing. Yeah.
It's like, it might look a little underwhelming, but I think performance wise, this thing is awesome.
Yeah.
So
tell us about the specs, Nolan.
Will do. So the new V6 power plant makes 1,184 horsepower. And revs to 9,200 RPM.
God damn, those are high RPMs.
It's insane. 887 of those horsepowers come from the V6 alone. This thing does 0 to 60 in 2.1 seconds.
I just want to make it clear because I don't think we've mentioned it yet. It's twin turbo V6.
Yeah, it's a twin turbo V6. It's a hot turbo setup. So the turbos are on top of the engine and the intakes are on the outside of the V. And it's a very wide V as well. It's like 120 degree angle V6 to make more space for those turbos on the in.
So those turbos are going to sit on that like center axis
of
the V?
Okay. Yeah, above the engine. I think it's super cool. Super cool design. Like, as I said, this thing generates 2,315 pounds of downforce at 155 miles an hour thanks to some active aero on board, as well as F1 aerodynamic technology like ground effect. However, in Kyle's video, he brings up that he thinks this is more of like a road car platform that has been adapted to be a race car because where the the under tray and all the ground effect tunnels are the Venturi tunnels. There's also a lot of divots in there where the fasteners that hold it on are. Like, you can clearly see, like, the heads of the bolts and stuff, like, cut out from these panels, whereas more serious race cars would cover those.
They would have, like, a full panel.
Yeah, so there wouldn't be, like, as many creases, like, joining areas where the panels are coming together, as well as where the hardware is holding the thing onto the car.
But it also, it makes so much downforce that is, like, hundreds of pounds more than
that's true.
A 911 GT3
when
RS.
When do you call enough aero? What is the max?
There can always be more. There can always, especially with ground effects, because ground effect aerodynamics, like, the car is being sucked to the ground rather than being pushed into it, and it doesn't create as much drag. So, like, you could get more and more. You could have more grip for less cost of drag, right? Because, like, wings make a lot of drag. That's what, like, F1 cars very, you know, make a lot of downforce, but they also create a lot of drag. This,
but how much are they leaving on the table if it's only a bolt here and there?
You know, it could be like a couple percentage points.
It's already got so much downforce. You know, win is enough.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Big thank you to our sponsor this week, Yamaha. Guys, life is an adventure, and it's time to let more people in on the fun and share the journey. Introducing Yamaha's latest terrain-conquering side-by-side that combines class-leading power with maximum comfort and versatility. The all-new Wolverine R-Max 4-1000 has ample room for four adult passengers. They better, four of me in there, that's a lot of room. Plus, plenty of cargo space so you can tackle new terrain, expand your horizons, and go further than ever before. Side-by-sides are pretty much roller coasters that you control. These things are super fun. If you've never ridden in a side-by-side or driven one, get down to your Yamaha dealer. Go for a little test drive if possible. You won't regret it. Experience its capability at yamahamotorsports.com and see your local dealer today. Always protect the environment and wear your seatbelt, helmet, eye protection, and protective clothing. Read the owner's manual and product warning labels before operation.
Now back to the show.
My point about the styling, though, is, like, yeah, it is underwhelming, but this thing, I think, will just be an absolute monster. You know, we've got the McLaren W1 was also released. We talked about that, I think, last week.
Yep.
And then Porsche has its own hypercar that they're working on.
But they also just released a new GT3 RS.
Yeah. Well,
with a bunch of
upgrades. Yeah, it won't even be in the same realm as this car, though.
I don't think so.
No. GT2, maybe. GT3 is like a lesser tier.
Okay.
This thing's like meant to be a road going like prototype car.
Yeah.
Whereas the GT3 is a GT3 car, road going sure. GT3 car.
Maybe we'll see like ASAP Rocky driving around in
maybe.
One. But I think it's more towards like, it's more geared towards the person that is going to use it on track.
I think it is definitely more of a track focused car, more than we've seen from the other F cars out there.
Are we in like another supercar battle with this McLaren? You know,
I mean, sure, for sure, we're gonna see, like, especially in Porsche brings their hypercar out. They're gonna definitely be the same kind of like Holy Trinity showdowns, like we saw with the P1 and the LaFerrari and the 918 Spider.
And even before that, like F1, the F40, and the like roof Yellowbird.
Absolutely, yeah. But now we got, you know, AMG one.
Yeah.
It's also in the mix. We've also got the Aston Martin Valkyrie, Adrian Newey's like turbine F1.
Oh, and then the Gordon Murray T50.
Yeah. So I think there's probably in different categories there, but I don't know. Someone on Reddit brought up a good point. Is like 15, 20 years ago, you had like your Ferrari collectors, you had your McLaren people and your Porsche people. Which one you chose said more about your allegiance to the brand, and also like you were probably a fan of that brand. You only collected that car, but now it's like the people that can afford these can buy anything.
Yeah,
right.
So start your Pokemon, man. Choose
yeah.
which one.
Yeah, yeah. But now it's like you're not just choosing wisely. Like whoever buys this Ferrari will probably also buy the W1 and whatever Ferrari puts out. So it's just like I think Ferrari knows that, and they're saying, hey, you're going to buy all three of these. Ours is going to be the best, and you're going to drive ours the most, or you're going to choose ours to drive on track because we're Ferrari and we're a race car company first.
What would you say that for what Pokemon do you think Ferrari is? Charizard?
Oh, yeah.
Charizard?
Yeah.
No, okay. Because then now, which one's Blastoise?
I think
Porsche or
it's McLaren because Blastoise is orange, isn't he?
Blastoise is not orange.
Oh no, who's the orange dude that's like this?
Orange dude that's like this.
That's it's it goes Squirtle, something else, and then
it's Charizard. Squirtle, it's Bulbasaur, and then it's Charmander. Charmander. Charizard is the third evolution.
Yeah.
I'm really showing my nerd right now.
Who's the orange one that's like this?
That's Charizard.
No. Charizard's like
Charmeleon.
There's Charmander, Charmeleon, and then
I'm not talking about the different evolutions. This is a completely different Pokemon.
That's Venusaur.
Okay. I thought he was orange for some reason.
Okay. All right. I like how you say he stands like this. Yeah.
So if being an Audi tech, what do you think? What Pokemon is Audi?
Oh, shit. That's
Mr. Mime?
Yeah.
I can't, you know, it's really funny. Everyone shits on Audis. I used to shit on Audis so hard before I worked on them. And now I genuinely like appreciate them. And I
Audi RS3 is one of my favorite cars.
For the size that they are, the compact, like the power that you're making.
So fun.
They're ridiculous. Monster.
And also really great daily driver as well. Super comfortable when you want it to be and like has all the tech, like all the tech you want. But then if you take it out to stunt road or something, you got the fastest car on the mountain for sure.
Dude, top two Audis that I love. Controversial because it's not going to be an R8. RS6 Avant.
That's my favorite. Mm-hmm.
The best looking wagon ever.
I saw one driving the other day and I was like, yeah, it's still sick. Yeah.
It's still the best looking wagon.
Yeah.
As of right now, there's no manufacturer that has created a wagon.
The proportions look so well with the 22s that come on it.
On a shitty copy and paste tune, you can make like 900 horsepower like that.
God damn.
The RSQ8s are also bitchin'. Yeah,
they're like baby Urus, right?
Yes, they are the baby Urus.
Oh yeah, we had one of those for a little bit. It was really fun, really great car. I'd definitely rather have that over the Urus because Urus is just, I don't know. I think they're kind of ugly.
I love how fancy you are, Nolan.
I know. Urus.
Urus, and then you earlier, Le Petit, wait, was it?
Petit Le Mans.
Le Petit Le Mans.
All right, so we will definitely see, W1 versus F80 versus whatever Porsche's got cooking up. We're going to see that. I think
we're going to see a thumbnail on YouTube at some point where there's going to be two white guys with crossed arms at a drag strip with the F80 behind it and the W1. You know, that's going to be like at least six different things.
I got my money on the Ferrari for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want, you know what? I do want to see if what you were saying is the case, right? And let's say Ferrari is just like what the consumer wants in regards to style points. Let's just give you an actual race car. Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%. I want to see them succeed.
On the same token, I think McLaren has been doing that for most of their cars. Mm-hmm. Like they do have the more comfortable rides like the GT.
The power to weight ratio on the McLaren's better, but I just think Ferrari, it's like they built a road going prototype and I think that will speak for itself. Our next story here. Honda has been working on a manual transmission for electric vehicles, guys. That's right. So a few companies like Toyota have teased manuals for EV, but so far there hasn't been one to make it to production yet. But all we know is that it is a traditional three-pedal setup, not a paddle shifter design like in the Hyundai Ioniq 5. Regardless, it has no mechanical connection to the drivetrain.
So it's drive-by-wire, and it's going to be like sim-like.
Interesting.
I can't stand behind that.
You're not a fan of EVs trying to be gas engines?
I think the reason why I can't stand behind it is because it's like there's no purpose for it. It's really just to like try and attract consumerism. Like, oh, you guys, I feel like it's kind of one of those things where it's like trying to attract or appeal to like the audience that's like EVs, you know?
I think you're on the money. Yeah.
And I think Dodge did that same thing with the Charger where they're like, they came out with that video a while ago where it's like,
brother,
we're not like, you know, we're being forced to make an EV, but we're going to make it our way.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make it big and tough.
Nobody really buys it.
We're going to make it loud.
Yeah, it is. If there's really no connection, like if it's not like you're actually shifting a transmission, then what's the point, really? Yeah. It does feel pretty gimmicky. It's like, I don't think it's the transmission. I don't think is really the issue here. I do like the paddle shifting kind of thing. It, like in the Hyundai is novel, but the real issue is the weight of the cars, I think. That's what's making these things not as dynamic to drive. So I think that instead of like working on this, they should keep like focusing on making lighter solid state batteries for these cars, and make it just more agile, you know?
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
I'm trying to think of like the actual mechanics of it. So if you have, let's say this is would be like a supercar, but like four individual electric motors on each wheels, mm-hmm. and you have a clutch that disengages the drivetrain to each wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like putting a bunch of input in, super torquey electric input, and then you just drop the clutch. Like, wouldn't that just be so detrimental to like every little electric motor in there?
Yeah, probably.
Well, that's to say that if the clutch is even doing anything, realistically, right?
Yeah.
They could do that, or they could play it as like, it's just giving you a feel. It's just sending signal to your computer or whatever. That's just like, okay, they shifted. Give it, mm-hmm. give a shift feel. Give it a little lag. Yeah. Give the accelerator pedal mm-hmm. a little lag. When it doesn't, when in reality, it's not connected to the rest of the powertrain, and it's not like doing anything like that, you know?
And it's making the car worse too. You know, like,
dude, if I have an electric vehicle and I stall, I'm gonna be so pissed because it's not stalling; it's just all simulated.
Yeah, simulated stalls is really funny.
Yeah.
Or like simulated
you
blowback.
Suck.
Like,
yeah.
Oh my god, that would be horrible. Because in my head, I know I'm like, this is not necessary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not happening.
It is weird. And look, like, I mean, nobody's surprised. Like, I am I like driving EVs when I get to, but this just feels like so not worth the effort.
Well, you drove an EV.
I was about to say, I've driven an EV with a clutch before. Was that electric GT? That was up in the valley.
Yes,
I think it was electric GT.
Yeah.
And
it was a Ferrari.
I didn't drive the Ferrari. I drove a convertible that they
Alfa Romeo,
something like that. Alfa Romeo or MG or something with a convertible.
Yeah.
Or sorry, with a conversion. And the weird thing about that is like you could start in any gear because an electric motor can't like die like an engine. So like you could start it, you could put it in second gear. You don't even have to like feather the clutch or anything, right? Because you're just like you let off the clutch and then press it. And then to keep moving down the road, you do have to row the gears and use the clutch and stuff. But
can you hear it? Can you hear it like kind of hit the rev limit or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, you feel it too because like it runs out of gear in that transmission. Oh, okay. So like you have to go up to the next gear to keep going, to keep accelerating. Again, something like that.
Are we sure that's a gear that like it runs out of a gear? Are we sure that that's not just a limiter?
It was a electric motor bolted like with a bell housing adapter to go on to a T56 or something like that.
Okay.
I think it wasn't T56 because mine was a 4-speed, whatever transmission was in there. Mm-hmm. So it was a old transmission with this EV motor on in front of it. So it was legit, but I mean, for a consumer car, having a real transmission like that would severely hamper your efficiency.
Yeah.
Because that's like antithetical to what an electric car is, basically. Those are usually either direct drive on the wheel or minimal gearing, in the transmission there.
But this isn't the first time, like it didn't start with EVs. It started with CVTs where they had to program in the gear change so people felt more comfortable, like instead of just kind of with the CVT, you could theoretically like have the same RPM and just like keep speeding up, right?
Yeah,
that's why they programmed the shifts, because people were really turned off by that, because you'd be like foot to the floor and your car would be staying at like $4,000 droning like, but you'd still be accelerating and people weren't used to it, so they had to program those shift points in. I don't know if there's any cars on the road that actually have a true CVT experience where you still feel. Did your Subaru do that?
My Subaru had fake shifts.
Fake shifts. Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's a way to like, because you would be more efficient if you didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's why I don't like these program, like these changes that they program in, where it's like, just make it good and make it, people aren't driving an EV to do burnouts. Maybe some people are.
But like, again, but Steph, you were right. It's like they're making this gimmick to appeal to a crowd that is already a losing battle when it comes to winning them over on this stuff. Whereas I think like making strides in the battle against physics the weight of the car is where they're going to win those people back.
Which I just think is like, I think it's a slippery slope either ways, right? Because it's like you said, it's a losing battle, like trying to appeal to these people. But then again, like to the other side of it, people love creature comforts. Mm-hmm. People love having all these electronics and all this shit. And it's like, well, how do you think that's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Enough battery voltage and stuff, you know? So I think it's just a tough battle for manufacturers to fight. And they're just going to have to...
They'll figure it out eventually. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
Between fake shifts and BBLs, I don't know what to believe in anymore.
Speaking of car companies that want to make their EVs fun to drive, BMW just announced all their cars are going to start looking like EVs.
Mm.
If you haven't seen pictures of this yet, BMW's Neue Klasse, I hope I'm saying that right.
Yeah,
I think so. It was announced last year, but the head of design at BMW, Adrian van Hooydonk, Hooydonk said that all new models will use similar design language to the Neue Klasse, even their gas-powered cars, too.
Okay.
So this includes shared bodies that can be either electric or gas-powered.
Like the Charger.
Like the Charger, yeah.
Is that what I'm looking at
this
right now?
This was the sedan that they teased, but there's also...
That's disgusting. I don't like it. I'm sorry. Listen, I like kind of going back to what Nolan was saying about like sharper angles. Yeah. I love sharper angles on cars. I think
you might like these new ones that they. These are very sharp.
Are they?
And it's squished. The teleprompter is squished.
Oh yeah, it's a little squished.
It looks like the pig from Angry Birds. Where he has like a furrowed eyebrow.
I just don't know who this is supposed to like appeal to, honestly.
I think if anything, I think what this is going to do from a production and manufacturing side, I think it's going to lower their cost. Because think about it. Yeah. They don't have that many variety now.
Yeah.
So now they just have to mass manufacture a bunch of these. And then it's kind of like a shell. You mass manufacture the shell and you throw whatever the fuck you want in it.
Mike Burrows, Stanceworks, he put out a really good video a couple months ago about BMW design and how they're like abandoning their core fan base.
Yeah.
And definitely check that video out. It's like 20 minutes long, but he has like a really impassioned thesis about where they're going and like why it just does not work.
Yeah.
And I got to go back and watch it again after seeing these new Klasse.
If you want to know what Van Hooydonk said.
Sure.
He told Top Gear, the big push with EVs, these technologies and this design language will transfer over the entire product portfolio, including our combustion vehicles. For the customer, it won't be difficult. They will all get new modern BMWs and they can choose the drivetrain. So I'm just playing devil's advocate right now. From a production standpoint, it makes sense to make these modular chassis.
I understand.
Kind of just drop in EV engine or...
That makes sense, but like it doesn't look good. Yeah.
You're going to do that making a car that's going to appeal to both sides of the spectrum, because that's essentially what you're doing,
Yeah.
And right now, it just solely feels like you're appealing to the EV side of the spectrum and abandoning that.
I don't even know if it's that, because I don't think EVs, well, at least in the U.S., the EVs don't make up the majority of sales yet. I don't even think it's like 30% yet. It is around 20, I want to say. But I think the design language they're going with overall is just wrong. It just does not feel good. It doesn't feel German, doesn't feel BMW, certainly doesn't feel BMW.
Yeah.
Again, Mike Burrows, check out his video on that because he puts it a lot better than I could, but because he's a huge BMW fan. Mm-hmm. But even from someone who like casually likes BMWs, I mean like all three of us, it's just like.
Yeah. So apparently they have 5 Neue Klasse models that are in the works for 2029. That includes a 3 Series, an M3, whatever that thing was, and plus a couple SUV models. So this is going to be the new normal in a couple of years.
I guess so.
Like we're already seeing it with, especially Audis. There's some design language that is reminiscent of EVs, like the real thin LED lights.
Mm-hmm. They have like a fake grille.
Yep. Yeah. So I think it's the EV design language is translating to not just BMW, but all these other car companies. Certainly Hyundai.
I prefer Hyundai styling over the BMW.
I don't think the Honda styling is that bad.
I think they're doing a good job.
Yeah, I think they're definitely a lot sexier than wherever the hell that was.
Yeah. There's one EV company that's more focused on being a passenger than a driver. Tesla has unveiled their long-promised driverless taxi, the Cybercab. This was a couple weeks ago. In typical Tesla fashion, the car comes 4 years after Leon promised that millions would be on the road, and it's still not actually ready. I know it's Elon.
That's what Trump calls him.
Leon. Yeah. We should just stand with that and call Leon. Him Leon.
I mean, yeah. I mean, the pitch was that, like, your Model 3 will get a software update and it will become a cab that will earn you expendable income.
That was really the pitch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's what Elon's been saying for years.
I just can't see that. I can't see fully autonomous vehicles happening.
Not in the way that Tesla's doing it.
No.
So debut test rides were not done in public roads. In fact, they weren't done on roads at all, but at the Warner Brothers lot in Burbank, California.
Get out of here.
Yep.
Oh, you don't like Burbank?
How do you know?
I wouldn't put it past them that there might have been a guy controlling these cars with an RC controller.
There's
just in a
I'm
room
not
back
gonna,
room somewhere.
I'm not going to lend too much weight to this conspiracy, but there was a picture from one angle of someone zoomed in and there was a guy with like a big controller. I'm not like lending this any legitimacy, but I think it would be really funny if a guy was controlling it.
So in West LA, you see those little carts driving down the sidewalk. Yeah.
The little robots?
The little robots carrying food to people's
house. Are there actually people driving those?
Those are RC, aren't they?
No, I thought it was all full.
They drive too well to be self-driving.
No, I mean, there's really good LiDAR technology right now.
Yeah, but a really good LiDAR, though, on Waymo, where they have like the giant thing on top of the car. Yeah. They got sensors all over, but those little carts just have cameras. Same with the Teslas. Elon is like convinced that cameras is is the best way to do self-driving, and that's why they've been having so much struggles with it, rather than like LiDAR and other advanced radar technology. Turns out self-driving with cameras is really, really, really difficult to program.
Sure.
Rather than like digital mapping with a giant radar a thing like a World War II radar station on top of your car. So so the wheels on the Cybercab are spray painted Continental tires.
Yeah, also zoomed in and they were like, there's like a big cap that makes it look like a future car. But then if you zoom in even more, you see that it doesn't extend to like the meat of the tire.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like a Continental logo and someone spray painted silver up until the logo.
I need to see these pictures.
It looks bad. I mean, this looks horrible. It doesn't matter what it looks like because it's going to be a cab, but it looks bad.
Yeah. So, again, not new technology. Google's self-driving Waymo taxi service, as we already mentioned, already covers a huge chunk of LA and several other cities at this point, again, with their giant LiDAR systems on board, not cameras. I'm sure they have cameras, but in addition to their radar systems.
Yeah.
This is just so stupid.
And I would much rather like trust a dude somewhere in like in his basement, like with like controlling it like an RC car,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
than just a freaking computer cameras. Like
Do you remember a while ago when Amazon came out with like the shop that you go in and it scanned what you had and it charged your Amazon account when you walk out? So that ended up being a farce, and there was like a whole team in India that were just watching on cameras to see what you picked up.
No way.
And they were like, yeah, it's all computers that like scan what you have in your hand and it charges your account. But it's really just a bunch of people just like zooming in to be
those
like,
12 year olds are putting it overtime.
Are those Cheeto Puffs? And then they like add it to your account.
That's insane. That's so crazy. This is stupid. And
there's a funny meme.
Apparently
where
would have a price of like, $30,000 is what they said, where you could buy one of these things and then it earns money for you, but also takes you places. And it's like, what's the point where there's too many of these things on the road to where nobody's making money?
Yeah.
I think this could be controversial, but I think if, and I don't stand by this whatsoever, I hate these things, but if he was smart enough, he wouldn't try and sell these to the masses.
Right.
He would approach Uber. and lift.
Right.
Yeah. And be like, I will sell you a fleet of these.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Instead of like,
they make it exclusive to one brand too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, I mean, that'd probably be like most lucrative.
Well, I mean, you'd end up like hopping in one of these things. And then before you start your ride, you have to like look at like three tweets by like Nazis or something.
You have to like them.
You have to like them. And then
get past the stop sign.
Exactly. Yeah. So it just wouldn't be a very good experience is what I'm saying.
Elon Musk reinvents public transportation like every 4 years or thinks he does. And it's like the other vehicles that he announced during this press conference. One is just a bus, dude.
Yeah.
Like we already have buses. Like he's trying to dig a tunnel from LA to San Francisco. We already have the metro. Like, what are you doing, man?
That'd be crazy if he did that and he was like, Tesla's only.
Well, that's what he said.
Yeah.
Like he actually had a test tunnel in Las Vegas built where you would hop in to go from one casino to the other and you just get in a Tesla underground.
And guess what? Traffic.
Yeah.
So it stopped working. Like it was too jammed up with traffic. So you're That'd just stuck terrifying. In this underground tunnel in a Tesla for like an hour. And this was like during one of the launch events for this thing. And they're like, oh yeah, we're still working it out.
Oh my God.
No. Everything is so half-assed.
Stupid. But this feels like a stock pumping kind of stunt. There's no way that this thing goes on the road or makes it to market for $30,000. And everyone should stop treating this guy like a genius. And I mean, I think people are starting to get over the hype of Elon Musk. I feel like the more he talks, the more people are like, oh, he's definitely dumb.
He's just like me.
He's just like me, a dumbass. Only he's got like $162 billion.
Yeah.
It's not liquid though, dude.
Not liquid.
I love when rich people are like, it's not liquid though. It's like, I don't have the cash. Like,
okay, yeah, motherfucker. I don't. What is the most valuable thing in your house right now? Yeah. Like, I bet your spoons are more expensive like, than mine.
Oh, your five houses. Okay, cool. Yeah. The timing of the Cybercab debut ended up being pretty bad because on Friday, barely a week after the reveal, the National Highway and Traffic Safety Administration, or NHTSA, announced it was opening a new investigation into Tesla's full self-driving system, the same system the Cybercab's tech is based on after another fatal accident.
As they should. Right on NHTSA.
And now, here's our exclusive interview with three-time IMSA champion Felipe Nasser. To see more of our weekend at Petit Le Mans, check out our video on youtube.com/donutpodcasts.
We are here with Felipe Nasser, IMSA Drivers Championship, former F1 driver. Felipe, thank you so much for being on
the
podcast.
Thank you guys for coming along.
This year is a little bit different than last year. Last year was a little bit chaotic. What did you learn from last year that you're taking into this season?
Well, last year was obviously the first time we were taking the car into the championship after all the testing and development. One thing is testing. The other is when you put things to the real test, which is racing. And, you know, racing brings a lot of different dynamics. There were spotlights where the car was quick and the performance was there. We had way too many reliability issues along the way. When I got into the project, I got on the very early days, so I knew it was going to take some time, and I knew we had to be patient to go and fix all our, let's say, do our homework in a way. From mid-season on, we could see the car picked up so much pace. Our operation got better. Our strategies, you know, our setup understanding of the 963 got better. So I could see the progression.
Yeah.
And 24 started a completely different way.
I heard that you're a fishing fan.
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite type of fishing?
When I go to the Amazon, we go for the peacock bass, which is a specific fish that we have there in the Amazon where pretty much all the world records are taken, you know,
of that species.
Yeah, they're huge, man.
How does your 963, how does your car have an edge on the competition this year?
You know, the aero numbers, aero balance, the mechanical grip. There's a lot of work we do in the background, a lot of simulation work. We go to Germany often to do the simulator in there and test a bunch of parts before we reach the track. And the good thing is we have a global program.
Yeah.
So we have the cars running in IMSA in the US, and then we have the cars running the World Endurance Championship in Europe. So we can trade information instantly. So if we learn something here today in qualifying, that information is already in Germany and with the whole team. So we always trading that, and that pushes the whole team forward.
Before you put on your harness, before you get in the car, what kind of rituals do you have? Are you a superstitious person?
No, I'm not a very superstitious person, but I I have my methods that I do. You know, I like to meditate in the morning. As soon as I wake up, drink a bunch of water, meditate for a good 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, just sounds really healthy.
Just set the day. You know, I try to do a lot of visualization of things, you know, trying to see what the day could go. I try to keep a balance, you know, within the professional life and personal life. Like we were just talking about fishing, you know, I love cooking, I love doing all the things that, you know, takes you off mind of racing.
Absolutely.
And you have to have that balance. But coming to the track, it's, you know, that's my full-time job. And it's my dream job. You know, I'm very grateful for, you know, to be representing brands like Porsche and Penske. You know, the history they have in motorsport is there's nothing like that. So being part of that is, it's unique.
What's the worst Brazilian food you've had around the earth?
Like, oh, the worst.
Any place.
I can't remember one of those races that we had a steakhouse, a famous Brazilian steakhouse chain. And I tried to like...
Do you want to name them or you don't want to shame them?
No, I don't want to name, but I was like, this is not what we have in Brazil. Like, don't go there.
I have one last question for you. At Indianapolis last race, your power steering went out, right?
Yeah.
I know these cars are not designed without power steering. They're supposed to have them. The physical toll of you just fighting this power steering, which is harder, fighting the car without power steering or reeling in a gigantic Amazon bass.
Fish.
Yeah.
probably the car was harder, you know. Man, it was difficult. It was difficult. We, you know, things I don't wish to anyone to experience. But like you said, those cars, they are designed with all this ton of downforce they have and all this suspension design. You cannot drive those cars without power steering. But I was there. I dragged myself all the way to the points and took the points home, you know, got the checkered flag.
Yeah, that's awesome. Dude, Felipe, thank you so much
for the
interview.
Thank you guys for the time.
And good luck in the race tomorrow.
Yeah, let's go fishing as well. Huh?
Yeah, let's do it.
So we never went fishing.
Oh.
Damn.
He never answered my calls.
Well, you know, I mean, now that it's on the off season, maybe he'll hit you up.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to like go reach out on Instagram. Be like, hey, bro, let's get those bass going, dude.
Yeah.
Call them out right now, man.
Let's get those bass going. Right?
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. Thank you, Felipe Nasser, for being on the on the program.
Such a fun opportunity.
Yeah, it was cool.
Thank you to the Porsche Penske team for flying us out to Atlanta. The experience was so cool. If you've never seen an IMSA race before, go see it. They're going insane speeds. Like, you can walk everywhere. You can walk in the paddock. You can talk to the teams and stuff. It's very open and fun, and I think something that everyone should experience.
I want to go. It's good. All right. So thank you guys for watching. Thank you for listening. Wherever you get your big three on, we appreciate you so much. Mm-hmm. Steph, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you guys so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Hell yeah.
Follow us at Donut Podcasts on Instagram and for some behind the scenes stuff. Follow Steph at Radical_Steph. Follow Joe at Joe G. Weber. Follow me at Nolan J. Sykes if you'd like. Big thanks to the crew. We got Edgar Grajeda, Audrey Holden, and Mark Schroeder. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye. Bye.